The North Sound Energy Week with Stark Technical Services UK, a leading energy support partner where safety and people always come first.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester. This week has seen an Aberdeenshire firm retain £90 million in North Sea contracts. Offshore catering staff threaten strike action. Aberdeen Airport announced new offshore training facilities. An oil tycoon reveal new charitable donations. And the Energy Minister give us a new year roundup. To start the week, Aberdeenshire-based ASCO announced the retention of three North Sea contracts in a deal worth more than £90 million. Two are with Nexen Petroleum UK and one with Centrica Energy Upstream. Managing Director of ASCO's United Kingdom and Central Europe business, John Little, spoke with North Sound reporter Rebecca Curran following the announcement.
We've been working with both Centrica Energy and Nexen for some years now, and both contracts were rebid during the year, and we've successfully retained that work for both companies. Plus, we've expanded our Centrica product offering or service offering to include Northern North Sea work, which is a new frontier, I believe, for Centrica as far as direct work goes.
Fantastic. And what's the value of these contracts?
Combined, we believe the value is to be in excess of £90 million over the sort of next 4 or 5 year period.
Fantastic. So very significant. Given that you've retained, especially the first two, you said it's obviously a testament, you know, to the relationship you have with them.
Absolutely. We've been working with them for a long time. We have delivered, I believe, excellent service during that time, and that has been rewarded with the retention of these contracts.
Fantastic. And how long are the contracts for?
So both contracts have got 4 year term. For Nexen with two-year extension options, and the Centrica contract has a three-year term with 2 one-year extension options.
Fantastic. And is there any, obviously you've expanded obviously with the for Centrica for the Northern North Sea drilling operations, is that right? Yes. So I mean, is there any opportunity for, you know, for new jobs?
I think with the future is looking very positive for ASCO, and as we continue to grow and prosper, then there will always be a requirement for additional people with the right skills.
Also this week, offshore catering staff hit out saying they have no choice but to consider strike action in a row over pay. They're angry at the 4% wage increase offer currently on the table. Members will be balloted in January and could walk out in February. John Taylor from Unite the Union spoke to North Sound reporter Emma Glacken about the move.
We've taken consideration of our members' views, and we have decided that come the new year, we will conduct a ballot for strike action offshore within the catering workers. Unfortunately, it would appear to be the only form of action that's left to us. We had wage negotiations with the employers that have been unsuccessful, and the employers then refused to have further discussions. So the left has no other option but to start the process of taking official industrial action.
So what are the concerns of those working in the catering industry offshore?
Well, it was purely about wages. They had offered just over a 4% wage increase. We believed that our members deserved far more than that. They're multi-skilled, they've given a lot of commitment, and unfortunately quota wouldn't budge from the 4% wage increase.
And what's hoped, what are you hoping to achieve from this strike action then?
Well, it's quite simple. We believe that if our members offshore take industrial action, which would be regrettable, then the employers will come back with a better wage offer. I've negotiated for quota with quota for over 22 years, and this is the first time that we've ever had to go down this road. I think it's a shame, but we have to show quota that we have the organisation and the commitment from our members to take strike action, then we will.
Now, what will be the implication for men and women working offshore with there being no catering?
It depends how long we take the action for, but if there's no catering, then there's nobody working offshore.
So, John, what exactly is it that, when is this coming into place, then, this action?
We will start the balloting process just after the new year, and we would see the industrial action possibly starting end of January, beginning of February.
An Aberdeen oil tycoon announced a multi-million pound investment in three new charitable projects this week. Sareen Wood is ploughing a further £3 million into helping tea farmers in Rwanda and Tanzania. The aim is to help the smallholders develop good business principles. Speaking at the official press conference this week, Chief Executive of the Wood Family Trust, Joe Mackey, told us how this has more impact than a one-off donation.
We've announced an additional £3.7 million invested into three key programmes. One is the Rwanda Imbarutsu programme, which is a market systems programme aiming to increase smallholder yield and income in the tea sector in Rwanda. That's in partnership with the David Sainsbury Foundation. And also an additional key investment of £425,000 to the Prince's Trust Get Into programme, which is looking at getting young people back into work within Scotland who have previously not been in employment, education or training. And also a new pilot programme which is looking at global citizenship activities for young people in Scotland by sending their teachers overseas to volunteer in sub-Saharan countries, namely Uganda and Ghana.
In your work in the sub-Sahara, the main focus really is, as Sareen was saying, not but to help people help themselves.
Absolutely. The key kind of sustainability question in sub-Sahara is how can we support smallholder farmers to generate wealth and employment and prosperity for themselves and their families. And the best way we felt to do that was to really work within the industry and the market systems in which they were operating themselves so that the market works more effectively for the poor, so that we identify where there are constraints within that market and we provide solutions or finance to those constraints, and then hopefully the smallholder farmer will receive a sustained better price for the product that they're producing, which in our case is tea.
You just tell us a bit about the knock-on effects of this work then, as you spoke about earlier, you know, if you raise the price and improve the life of the farmer, then could you just tell us a bit about how that can spread and what other effects it has?
Okay, so I guess raised income on a sustained basis for farmers in sub-Sahara is important for two reasons. One is to help them reinvest in their business. I think a key point to make about sub-Sahara in general is that there is a massive lack of formal employment. So most people have to generate their own business activities to generate a living. So where in the UK we're maybe mostly informal employment, entrepreneurship and private businesses is essential in sub-Sahara. So finance provides an opportunity to reinvest in their business and help their business grow. But more importantly, it provides income for education, health. You know, you can't just walk into an NHS clinic and get free health service. You have to pay for it in sub-Sahara. You have to pay, in the most cases, for your children to go to school. So a key thing for us is we want to generate that wealth to allow that to happen. It's very important.
And you said yourself that you were out there on the ground actually speaking to these farmers. Is that when it kind of really hits home just what a different culture you're dealing with and how important it is to adapt to them, as you were saying?
It's essential. It's essential to not put a Western culture on a business community and a social structure that is very, very far from the West. And you very much need to understand how to do business and how society operates to really try and even consider being effective. When you're sat face to face with a farmer in a field in Tanzania and they're telling you that a price income for them has resulted in sending their kids to school, it's like no other experience that you could possibly ever imagine. But our job is to ensure that economic viability for them is sustained. The worst thing we could do is artificially provide economic enhancements, and then when our money was gone, it was taken away, which is why it's so important to work with the market systems.
But as you say, just briefly, that you have to work in the way that they're accustomed to, and that and to deal with a different market. But obviously, there's more than money with the trust. There's things that you can bring to the table other than just the funds as well. Could you just tell us a bit about what you've brought to there to try and improve things?
Okay, I guess we've very much, the work we do in Sub-Sahara actually, and the work that we do in the UK is very driven from our side by having a quality management team, being able not only to financially support the programmes, but to actually to provide some key skills in capacity building, business execution, analysis and thinking. So we very much work with our partners to try and help solve their softer issues in business or charity, as well as giving them the financial capacity to be able to deliver on that.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stark Technical Services UK, global leaders in knowledge-based asset integrity management solutions.
And I spoke to Chairman Sir Ian Wood about the importance of the work the Trust does in Africa and here in Scotland.
I think what is encouraging is that we're more hopeful than we were a year ago that will have some impact, particularly in Africa. It's a difficult environment. There's a huge amount of work being invested in consultancy and investigation, but nothing like enough in implementation. So we're at the implementation end. We've chosen the tea industry in Tanzania and then again in Rwanda. And there are signs. Tanzania is now about 2 years old. We've got some really good people on the ground. And there are signs that we're beginning now to have some impact. We're working with the grain of the local industry. We're really working on behalf of the smallholder farmer, who really doesn't come out of the value chain at all well, in spite of being the kind of prime producer. There's complex arrangements with the tea plantation and the factory that buy the tea. But a real plus this year has been managing to have a big impact on the tea price, which helps all the smallholder farmers in Tanzania. And other parts of the programme are beginning to show improvements in yield. So it's encouraging. It's a five-year programme, so we've another 3 or 4 years to go.
And the tea farmers, and you know, you were so keen to stress, just that they're not business-minded, you know, they're not looking to expand this themselves. So just how important is that to kind of, you know, aid that as much as possible and bring the expertise that the Wood Group has?
It's part of the culture. Most of these smallholder farmers, all of them, it's a way of life. It's not a business, you know. So they maybe got 1 or 2 hectares of land. An important part of it is actually producing food for the family, and they often can't produce enough food for the family. But then it has to be a cash crop where they can actually sell. So tea is the cash crop, but in many cases, it's not looked on as a commercial venture at all. They plant tea the way they've always planted tea. They pluck tea, they harvest tea, and they sell it through the co-op into the factory. They've got no commercial capability at all to try and improve their position, financial position. They don't invest, you know. Simple investment in fertilizer, which is an obvious way to try and improve your tea yield. Generally, they don't invest in fertilizer. They don't have the funds to do it, and they're too short-term in the thinking. That's been part of the challenge. You know, we will actually tip it over the edge when we get to the stage where they can see tea as a worthwhile enough business that they start thinking of investing and how do they do better. That's the kind of mindset change we've got to be. Not just go and do as you did in the past, but if I do this, and this differently, I'm going to significantly increase my yield and therefore my income. And we're not there yet. But there's some signs we're beginning to get there in some cases.
And just to touch on your work here in Scotland as well, you know, especially with YPI, you know, how important is it that young people are made aware of the charitable causes in their area at such a young age, to hopefully, if they go on and be successful, to have that mind? How important is that for the Trust?
Yeah. I've said in a number of speeches, I think my generation has failed badly, both at thinking globally and trying, in fact, to be meaningful contributors to have a kind of more equitable society, and I really, really believe that. So some of our Scottish programmes, YPI certainly, is about trying to encourage young people to understand what's happening across the community. You know, each of us lives in our own path in life, and we notice some things, we don't notice some things. What YPI does, it takes all the young children involved into contact with a charity. They choose a charity, they go and spend time with it, they understand it, they understand the finances, they understand the challenges, they understand what it does. They then come back and there's a bit of a competition, and the winner is allowed to give £3,000 to their charity. But that's frankly secondary. Primary is, you've got, it's now 10,000 children we've covered in Scotland, and that'll increase significantly. All have had an experience of what's happening in the community. And there's clear evidence that in some cases, well, first of all, what is really good is the kids love it. They do enjoy doing it. And secondly, there's some, you know, real signs that the kids are actually prepared to use that experience and knowledge, and they want to learn more about it, and they carry on doing things. So it's very much partly what they do for the community, but also opening their mind to, you know, actually there's a world out there with a whole lot of problems. You know, can I do something to help them?
Also this week, Aberdeen Airport revealed a new military jet fighter to improve services at the fire training centre. The facility is predominantly used by those working in the offshore industry for emergency training, and a record 12,500 employees are expected through the doors in 2012. Airport Managing Director Derek Provin says it's going from strength to strength.
Today we've just taken ownership of a new Jaguar military aircraft, and that will create additional scenarios for the students who operate through the commercial fire training team at the airport. This year we'll see over 12,500 students come through the facility, which is a fantastic result based on our performances year on year. And certainly this new aircraft, which is very impressive, I must say, I've just went down and had a look at it, creates scenarios not just for the oil industry, because as well as supporting the offshore industry, we support the marine industry and also aviation firefighters from around the UK. And this provides realistic scenarios to ensure the safety of those firefighters as they move forward in the training next year.
And finally, our political editor Colin Mackay caught up with Scottish Energy Minister Fergus Ewing for a yearly roundup. He says Scotland looks set for its highest ever renewables output in 2012. £750 million worth of projects were switched on in 2011, and another £46 billion are in the pipeline for next year. Mr Ewing says it's been an exceptional year.
Fergus Ewing, how has our renewable energy improved over the last year? Because it dipped slightly in 2010.
Well, 2011 will prove to be a record year for renewable output in Scotland. More of our electricity than ever before will be produced from renewable sources. And we've seen £750 million of investment in the last period. But in the pipeline, we've got £46,000 million of potential investment in renewable energy projects in Scotland or off our shores. We're on the verge of creating a new industry in Scotland and seeing exciting opportunities for thousands of young people in our country.
So how much of our energy is now produced from renewables?
Well, we are set to achieve the target of 31% for 2011, the interim target. Of course, we want to go beyond that and produce 100% of the electricity that we need to consume by 2020. At the same time, it's important to stress we will continue with conventional power, with coal, with gas, with nuclear. I visited Torness recently. We'll probably see the extension of the lifespans of our nuclear stations. So it's not all renewable. We're not putting our eggs in one basket. We will continue with the backup that we need. But we will be exporting power to England. They need our energy to keep the lights on down south, and increasingly in Europe, as we have over decades to come, a supergrid. So the opportunities for Scotland from energy, from renewable energy, are massive, just as they are with oil and gas too.
There's a big, big difference in the amount of renewable energy being used and produced in Scotland compared to the rest of the UK.
Well, we are potentially Europe's green energy powerhouse. There are challenges. We need to see a fair deal for transmission charges for the islands, and the announcement from Project Transmit that would prevent them from benefiting from the slightly less unfair charges that they've proposed for the mainland must be extended to the islands too. And I'm speaking with the leaders of the island councils on that today, and I met yesterday with the Orkney leader. So there are challenges. There's the electricity market reform. There's the need for skills too. We will have skill shortages in some parts of Scotland, but we will see ports around Scotland, particularly in the East Coast, redeveloped, open, thousands of jobs created, memorandums of understanding entered into with major players in Scotland and throughout the world. We're on the verge of creating new industries in Scotland. I think that's an exciting challenge, and we will be pursuing this as hard as we possibly can, but working with our experts in the academic side, in our universities, and also in industry. We're working as Team Scotland meeting together, exchanging ideas, finding the best way to get our policy right, and working to implement those policies for the good of Scotland.
But does the dip in hydropower last year because of the lower rainfall levels show a degree of vulnerability in the renewable sector?
Well, that's matched by rises in other forms of renewable energy. Where you have a renewable mix, you have the ability to serve Scotland's energy needs better. And, of course, we will continue to have conventional backup. We're not putting all our eggs in the renewables basket as we move towards a low-carbon economy. But people support renewables. They know that we need to replace fossil fuels. We need to tackle the climatic problems. And let's give Europe a lead. Let's give the world a lead. Let's not be the tail-end Charlies. And we're in the lead, thanks to the First Minister's drive in this policy, thanks to companies like Scottish Power and SSE and their support and their work and their investment. £7 billion of investment, I think, over the next decade in our grid, creating potentially hundreds of jobs in places like the Highlands, enabling us to take the renewable energy from Orkney, Shetland, the Western Isles, from the Highlands to the Central Belt and beyond. This is a potentially a game-changing development for Scotland as we move forward out of the recession, driving forward economic recovery, and perhaps most important of all, giving hope and opportunities to our young people for generations to come.
And it will continue in the up in 2012?
I will be relentlessly positive in 2012.
And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stark Technical Services UK, delivering asset integrity solutions to the global energy industry.